free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, July 9th, 2014. And we're talking about affordable health care options in the age of Obamacare today with Sean Parnell, who runs the blog SelfPayPatient.com. And at least as importantly, is the author of The Self-Pay Patient, Affordable Healthcare Choices in the Age of Obamacare. Stay tuned after my conversation with Sean. I want to give you a prep for tomorrow's show. Plus, I have to get something off my chest. So stick around after that. But right now, let's welcome Sean to the show. Sean, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on, Tom.
Give us the one-minute overview of what The Self-Pay Patient is.
Sure. A self-pay patient is simply anyone who is paying directly for some or all of their health care. And the book that I wrote, The Self-Pay Patient, Affordable Healthcare Choices in the Age of Obamacare, as well as my blog, theselfpaypatient.com, are both intended to be resources for these self-pay patients, explaining how they can find affordable health care options by going to providers and facilities that cater to self-pay patients. A lot of facilities and providers in healthcare are so entangled in the health insurance system that it's difficult for them to actually just give a price, certainly a fair price, to a self-pay patient. But there are people and organizations out there that that cater to self-pay patients, and my book explains all of the places that people can go to get this information and to get the healthcare they need.
But why would I want to be a self-pay patient, if I may play devil's advocate here, if I can go through the insurance system, no matter how convoluted and bureaucratic it is, I can still get discounted care. So why? What interest would I have in divorcing myself from that? Or is this a strategy simply for people who don't have insurance?
It's a strategy for anybody who wants to be in control of their health care. You're right. People can, if they want to, be a part of the bureaucratic health care system, but I don't think that they're going to actually get much in the way of a discount. In fact, being a self-pay patient is usually going to be a lot less expensive than going through the insurance system once you start to factor in your premiums, your co-pays, your deductibles, and all of those sorts of things. One of the things that I've really discovered over the years, this is one of the things that spurred me to write this book, was that once you step out of the bureaucratic healthcare system of third-party payment, costs actually drop because the average doctor practice, for every doctor that they have in the office, they have one person whose job it is simply to submit the billing requests to the insurance companies, to haggle with the insurance companies, to argue with the insurance companies. It costs a lot of money to send paperwork back and forth from a doctor's office to the insurance company for what ultimately is, you know, a $60 or $70 or an $80 medical bill, and that just adds costs to it. So if you can step outside of that system and just pay directly, eliminate the overhead, then it's actually much less expensive in most cases to be a self-pay patient. Plus, you get to have control over your health care. You don't have to worry about an insurance bureaucrat or even a government bureaucrat saying, no, this is not an approved treatment, or this isn't on the formulary, we don't cover this. You step outside of that entirely, and the relationship that a self-pay patient has is directly with their doctor. There's no third party interfering with that.
Now, I had a guy named Dale Bellis on the show talking about Liberty Health Share as an example of a way that you could be more or less a self-pay patient in the sense that he's not really offering traditional insurance. He's just offering a system in which people share medical expenses together, and there's an exemption for that in Obamacare. But apart from an approach like that, as Obamacare comes into effect and people are penalized for not having insurance, doesn't the role of the self-pay patient in medical care diminish to, or even disappear?
I don't think so. One of the things that I point out is that to be a self-pay patient, it means you're paying for some or all of your medical bills. And most of the policies that are being sold through Obamacare and also the direction that most employer-provided insurance is going has very high deductibles, $2,000, $3,000, $6,000. And what that means is that even though you have insurance, conventional health insurance for the catastrophic event, cancer or a serious car accident, you are still a self-pay patient when it comes to going to the emergency room with a $500 bill because you sprained your ankle, or going to the doctor because you have a cold, or just sort of the everyday run-of-the-mill, relatively low-cost healthcare events that people have, they're going to be self-pay for those. And so the book that I wrote is designed not just for people who are uninsured, but also for people who have high-deductible plans who are going to be looking out there and being told by their insurance company, hey, you want to have an MRI on your knee because it's kind of sore? Well, that's on you. That's under the deductible. And if a patient in that type of a situation simply were to go to, say, their local hospital for that MRI, they're probably going to wind up paying anywhere from 3 to 5 times. And this is for somebody who's insured. They're going to wind up paying 3 to 5 times for that MRI what they might have to pay if they simply went to a standalone MRI clinic or one of the other facilities that I talk about in my book.
I'm sure that you would be familiar with the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Can you explain, or are you in fact familiar with that?
I'm very familiar with the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. I probably mention them at least once or twice a month on my blog.
Okay, I just thought there was a 3% chance maybe this somehow escaped your attention. But explain to the listeners then what the significance is of what they're doing, and do you think there's going to be more or less of this in the future, and why?
Sure. What the Surgery Center of Oklahoma does is very simple. They offer what is essentially what I call all-inclusive pricing, meaning that if you need a hernia repair operation, you go to their website and there's 4 or 5 different types of hernia repair operations, and it gives a single price, and it's all-inclusive. That means it includes the surgeon, the facility fee, the anesthesiologist, everything. This is in contrast to going to your local hospital or really any other full hospital in the country where a hernia repair operation might literally generate hundreds of lines of codes that are pretty much indecipherable and probably filled with a lot of errors and is probably inflated and is more than what you would pay for at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. So what they've done at Surgery Center of Oklahoma is just offer a flat price. You come in, you get the treatment, you pay for it, and you're done. There's no having to figure out, 5 months down the road, did the nurse really come in and deliver this medicine 3 times that day or 4 times that day? Because I'm getting charged for 4 times that day. You don't have to worry about any of that. And furthermore, because these are fairly simple cash prices that they're offering for people who are self-pay, who don't have insurance, who don't have access to the pre-negotiated rates that a lot of insurance companies do, unfortunately, what happens at most hospitals is they charge wildly inflated prices for basically to the uninsured. So a hernia repair surgery that might cost $3,500 at Surgery Center of Oklahoma, if you go to a major hospital in Brooklyn or Los Angeles or Topeka, Kansas, they're probably going to charge you $15,000, maybe $20,000 for that. Because of their, frankly, bizarre pricing strategies. So what Surgery Center of Oklahoma has done is simply said, okay, we're just going to charge people a fair price, a simple price, and they're doing very well by it. I do think that it is going to grow. Again, when we get back to the issue of Obamacare and the high deductibles that a lot of people are going to be finding, and I'm a fan of high deductibles, but they can be kind of startling to people at first. But I think that as more and more people wind up in these high deductible plans, they're going to be looking for places that they can go to, like Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where they can simply go get a fair price and know that they're not going to be haggling over, you know, 13 out of 28 line items on their bill 5 months after the surgery was done.
All right, you have a section here called Options for Employers, and I'm interested in that because I'm curious to know, especially in the age of Obamacare, because you have that in your subtitle, what options employers really do have. I mean, certainly their options have been diminished.
Yeah, and I'll preface this by saying that if anybody who is an employer and who's looking for ways to sort of opt out or at least limit the role of bureaucratic medicine and the healthcare benefits they provide their employees really needs to talk with a professional benefits administrator or health insurance broker. That said, I think I can offer a few thoughts on what I've seen being done that people can follow up with. One of the things that is sort of misunderstood about the Affordable Care Act is there's a belief that employers are required by law to offer this sort of very rich benefits package that the Affordable Care Act supposedly requires on employers. And while generally there is some benefits to doing that in some regards under the Affordable Care Act, there are some ways to get around that basically allow employers to still design benefit plans that meet the needs of their employees, but that don't conform with the very high standards, the very expensive standards that Obamacare would like to impose. Basically, it's a matter of finding a benefit package that works and then accepting that maybe a few of your employees will then wind up going to the Affordable Care Act exchanges and getting coverage, and that might result in a small penalty, but that's probably going to be much less than, one, the decision for a large employer not to offer health insurance at all, or two, the decision to offer a plan that does comply with all of the Affordable Care Act's requirements. So it's kind of convoluted, and like I said, you do need to talk with a benefits professional, and I usually recommend that people talk with Ralph Weber of Route 3 Benefits in Tennessee. He sort of pioneered a lot of the work that people are doing to sort of find creative ways to get out of the Affordable Care Act's supposed requirements on employers.
So we can see then reasons that patients themselves, as well as employers, might favor the kind of alternative strategies that you're advocating. But how about the physicians themselves? Now, what are the benefits to physicians of dealing with self-pay patients? And then secondly, if such benefits do exist, why are such physicians so few and far between?
Sure. The main benefit, and I get this from talking to a number of physicians, but the main benefits to them of dealing with self-pay patients it really is twofold. One is they get payment immediately, and they don't have the overhead expense associated with having to go through an insurance company. There's no requirements that they document their patient visits a certain way. They don't have to become experts in the billing codes that each company requires. They're able to simply accept payment for the services that they provide, and that's it. The other benefit to doctors, and this is what I hear probably more so even than the financial benefits, is they get to practice medicine, and it's just them and their patient. They don't have an insurance company saying, no, we don't cover that, or you need to get pre-authorization before we'll allow you to do this. It's restored the doctor-patient relationship and eliminated the third-party interference that doctors have been complaining about for a long time. I used to work for the congressman who was the author of the Patient's Bill of Rights back in the late 90s and early 2000s. And while that bill had its issues, one of the things that was very, very clear is that doctors were extremely unhappy with the degree to which insurance companies were interfering in that doctor-patient relationship. And that's sort of a necessary thing if you're going to have a third-party payer system, and which is why I tell people, if you don't want third-party interference in your health care, then move away from a third-party payer system.
Now, how is it possible that you can have a blog dedicated to this subject when I bet some people would think, once I've read his book, The Self-Pay Patient, that's pretty much all I need to know. Like, how could there be ongoing commentary on these basic principles? And I'm saying this because I generally want to know, what sorts of issues do you find coming up on a daily basis that are relevant to the self-pay patient concern?
Sure. The book was written basically just to be a guide to sort of lay out the basic ideas of how, for example, you can find a cash-only doctor, how you can save money on your prescription drugs. What the blog is intended to do is to supplement and augment and, in some cases, clarify and correct what's in the book, because things do change, and there are new companies that are springing up. In fact, you were talking earlier about the Liberty Health Share, healthcare sharing ministry. I actually only found out about them very late in the book editing process and was able to, you know, get them into the book in time. So now my book talks about there being four, not three, healthcare sharing ministries. But since then, I've actually learned about a fifth, Altrua Health Share, out of Dallas, Texas. There are new companies that are coming into this market on a regular basis. There are new offerings, and so the blog is intended to provide running commentary, news, and information about new developments in this area, new companies. You know, one of the things that I like to do is be able to tell my readers about a new cash-only a doctor's office that might be opening somewhere. It's a fairly regular staple of my blog. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, it's a short book. It's 123 pages, I think. There's just not enough room to put that sort of thing into a book. And with a blog, I can sort of extend and expand the information and commentary that I started in the book.
Well, you cover quite a few topics in a short amount of time in this book. The book is The Self-Pay Patient. Tell me again the subtitle, because I've mislaid my Kindle.
Sure. The full title is The Self-Pay Patient, Affordable Healthcare Choices in the Age of Obamacare.
There it is. Okay. And then you've got a blog and website by the same name, theselfpaypatient.com. I want to steer people in that direction. And I appreciate your time today. Any parting words of advice?
You know, my biggest advice is just, if you want to save money on healthcare and if you don't want to be part of the bureaucratic healthcare system, I think people should really consider becoming a self-pay patient. It's not for everybody, but I think that most people would benefit from this sort of system, and I would really strongly encourage people to consider their options, and most of all, just to understand that they do have options. That's one of the biggest myths out there, which is another one of the things that spurred me to write this book. People think that since the Affordable Care Act passed, they're stuck with it. They have to be part of that system, and they don't. They can opt out, and they can opt out in such a way, as my book describes and the blog expands on, opt out in such a way that they still have protection against major medical expenses, which everybody should be concerned about, and also still be able to find affordable health care for the run-of-the-mill stuff that they have to pay out of pocket.
Well, Sean Parnell, thanks for being with us today. Everybody, make sure and check out both the book and website, The Self-Pay Patient. Thanks, Sean. Best of luck. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow, I'm going to be having Pat Buchanan back on the show. He's got a new book out on Richard Nixon. Of course, Pat was a confidant of Nixon's, worked closely with Nixon for many years, and he has a kind of a behind-the-scenes account. And I personally, as a historian, have always found Nixon to be an extremely interesting person. I've read many biographies of Nixon just because I just can't get enough. I just find him to be interesting, the events of his life and presidency to be interesting. Doesn't mean I particularly like Nixon. I just find him to be interesting. I find a lot of bad people to be interesting. So I want to have Pat on to talk about this, and I need to prepare you. I am not going to persuade Pat Buchanan that Richard Nixon was a bad guy. That is not going to happen. There's not a thing I could say to Pat that would change his mind about somebody he worked with very closely, feels very strongly about. That's just not going to happen. That doesn't mean I won't say anything to Pat about Nixon. What I intend to do is say that I don't think that this strategy really seems to have worked out for conservatives, where they say, well, we have nowhere else to go, so I guess we got to be stuck with a guy like Nixon. I don't think that has worked. That has yielded John McCain. That has yielded Mitt Romney. Maybe you got to try something else. So that sort of thing. But there are issues on which Pat has well-formed ideas that are not going to be changed by me. So I primarily want to have him on for the historical discussion of Nixon. So that's tomorrow. Now, one final thing before I let you guys go. Yesterday, I posted on my Facebook page something that my wife had written. My wife is out of town for a few days doing something in Kansas City, and she's staying in a pretty nice hotel that she stays in, or we stay in regularly when we're in Kansas City. And the other night, this large Christian group of its young people showed up, and they're at this event where they're going to learn how to make Christ central in their lives. All right, fine. So the boys, who are all like young teenagers, decide they're going to take the 8 elevators, and they're going to go in and push all the 18 buttons so that the elevator, you know, is going to have to stop at each stop and whatever. And so the counselors are all standing around saying, gee, why are the elevators taking forever? And my wife says, well, it's because the boys pressed all the buttons on the elevators. And the counselor said, what, you really? She said, yeah. And they said, well, you know, what do you expect of boys? This is so typical, right? This is so typical. What do you expect? We expect people to be inconsiderate savages because they're young, right? I was an inconsiderate savage when I was young. Well, speak for yourself. So I posted this. And also, they're running around loud. They're running around like hyenas. Like, I don't teach my kids to behave that way when they're on somebody else's property. I don't teach my kids to think to themselves, I'm the only person in the world. There's nobody else here. I'm the only person in the world. I'll tell you, when I get awakened by some inconsiderate jerk in a hotel hallway making a lot of noise outside my room, I don't say to myself, ah, how wonderful to hear the joyful sounds of youth. How wonderful. I would never presume. After all, he hasn't committed violence against me. I'm so sick of libertarians who think that as long as you don't violate the non-aggression principle, you're a great person. Now, as long as you don't violate the non-aggression principle, you're a libertarian. But if that is your sole ambition in life, not to punch people at random, I dare say your ambitions are too low. Your ambitions for what you want to accomplish on this earth are too low. So anyway, I thought, well, obviously, by the way, I didn't even share the worst of it. But they're running around like hyenas at like midnight in the hotel. So wakes up our baby, takes an hour to get her back to sleep. Because, of course, these are the only people in the world. Well, would you believe, I actually had a minority of people on my Facebook page telling me that I'm in the wrong. Oh, this is an innocent prank that my exhausted wife has to wait 20 minutes to get up to the 18th floor because of these jerks. Or because they're such loud hyenas, they're waking up our baby. Well, you know, hey, this is the way kids are, Woods. You know, what kind of a stick in the mud are you? Now, anybody who knows my personality probably knows that I'm not somebody who is allergic to fun. But I did not act like that when I was a kid. I would have been mortified to act like that as a kid. My kids would be mortified to act like that. And I even have people saying, again, well, they didn't violate the non-aggression principle. I don't care. There are a lot of moral pigs who don't violate the non-aggression principle. Be a little bit more ambitious in the type of person you want to be. I even had somebody who is so set on defending these kids and saying that it's perfectly okay that my wife is inconvenienced. That apparently what my wife should have done, she should have stood there and said, ah, I have a screaming child, and I now have to wait an additional 20 minutes to get up to my room, but oh, it's because of a prank, so it's not really an inconvenience at all. Right? In fact, I'm probably in the wrong even to be upset about it. Apparently that's what she should have said in some bizarre alternate universe. But on this planet, most people would say, you know, I think that's just evidence of bad values, or at least inadequate encouragement of good values in these kids. Just basic lack of consideration toward others. Well, anyway, I had somebody saying, well, because they didn't violate the non-aggression principle, I have no grounds for complaint, and they're just having fun, and what's wrong with me? So I said, you know, I actually do think, by the way, they are violating property rights, because I'm pretty sure the hotel doesn't want them doing that. They have a lot of well-to-do customers whose repeat business they would like to have who don't want to be inconvenienced or awakened in the middle of the night. So the guy says, show me where their policy on not pressing all the elevator buttons is. Where is it posted? I said, stay away from my property. If you think the only social norms you need to observe are ones that are tacked up on the wall, stay out of my house, because before you know it, you'll be urinating all over my furniture and saying there's no sign saying you can't do it. All right, look, I need good, sound, solid, sensible people on my Facebook page who believe that it's wonderful to have fun. But when it comes to decisions that reflect what kind of human being you are, that we need to strive for excellence. As long as we're on this earth, we got to strive for excellence. Scholarly excellence, excellence in how we conduct ourselves, excellence across the whole span of our lives. That's what my kids strive for. And my kids are not boring. My kids are wonderful. It is unbelievably fun to spend time with my kids. Just because they don't inconvenience people doesn't make them bad kids. And in fact, I had somebody on my Facebook page say, you know, I think we need fewer people who are crabs running around criticizing, quote, our nation's young people. All right, putting aside the creepy phrase, our nation's young people, what I think we need less of, and I would say this after walking through any shopping mall, and I challenge you to do the same. Walk through a shopping mall, I think what we need less of are airheads who care about nothing and think they are the only people in the universe. I would say that's what we need less of, because it's people like that whom the regime wants to cultivate. Because people who are completely self-absorbed will never resist anything. All right, so do please like my Facebook page. Don't look for me on Facebook as Tom Woods. That's a personal account that I don't really use. It's just so I can comment on my wife's posts and stuff like that. But no, I have a page on Facebook, Thomas E. Woods Jr. The easiest way to do it is go to tomwoodsradio.com and just click like on the Facebook widget while you're there, and then you'll make me super duper happy. All right, that's that. So if I haven't alienated you by calling on everybody to be excellent in their conduct, support the show at supportinglisteners.com and make me feel good. But not just to make me feel good, to get you benefits. My new book is coming along very well. I think you guys are really going to like it. I really do go after the bad guys in a fun way in this new yet-to-be-titled book. I still have to sort through all the title suggestions from you guys. Thank you very much. Plus, transcripts of all the shows, 60% off at libertyclassroom.com, discounts at the Mises store and other places. Plus, I have so many goodies lined up for you guys between now and the end of this year. And then from that point until I drop dead, you're not going to believe it. I'm just going to say that. But you can help me out at supportinglisteners.com for as little as 5 smackers a month if you enjoy the show and you value what's going on this show. And finally, of course, at no cost to yourself, you can help us out when you're about to make an Amazon purchase. Remember us by entering Amazon at tomwoodsradio.com. All right, that's it for today. I'm a little late with the show today. I was up till 4 working. I'll try not to do that anymore. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.